Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for the 22nd of March. It's a Thursday. Very nice to have you with us. We'll keep you company for a little while, talk about what's happening in the world, and we do so with a wonderful panel, as always.
That was great music. What was that?
That was Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder.
Oh, boy. There's nobody better than Ricky Skaggs. You know, he started playing when he was around 5 years old, playing the he started playing with, I believe, Earl Scruggs and some of the others.
In the jeans, right?
It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Ricky Skaggs and Kentucky Thunder. All right. Let me introduce the group. Well, Alan's here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Joe.
Hi. Ira Fussfeld is with us. He is the Daily Freeman publisher emeritus, and he joins us this morning. We're glad to see you. You made it up the thruway.
Oh, no problem. Good to be back.
Very nice to have you with us. Teresa Bourgeois is hiding behind her computer. Hello. How are you? Your chair is much lower, I guess.
I know. It's really... Yeah.
But how are you?
I'm just... delightful today. Thank you. How are you?
Well, fine. Thank you. Nice to have you with us, our communications consultant. And then to the left on the radio, in many ways, our left. Yes.
That's to Teresa's right, actually. Probably not.
Our political consultant and regular panelist, Libby Post. Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
Very nice to have you with us as well.
Lovely to be here.
We have a lot to talk about, a lot to find out what people think, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. I look at five or six stories in front of me this morning. Any one of these we could start off with, and they could be your mm-hmm. good kicker of a story. Mm-hmm. But I would like to start off with the Facebook story, and this is, of course, been going on ever since the Cambridge Analytica story broke. Finally, yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg, who is the CEO and founder of Facebook, spoke out on this, publicly addressing for the first time the misuse of data belonging to 50 million users of the social network, and described the steps that the company would take to safeguard the information of its more than 2 billion monthly users. Yes, 2 billion. Although his statement addressing a chorus of criticism fell short of a full-throated apology, Mr. Zuckerberg said that Facebook would contact users whose data had been harvested through a personality quiz app and passed along to the political data firm Cambridge Analytica. "We have a responsibility to protect your data," Mr. Zuckerberg said. "And if we can't do that, then we don't deserve to serve you."
Can you imagine the number, Joe, of consultants and others who are sitting around that table coming up with that statement?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a brilliant statement. It's exactly what he should have said. "We messed up. We're sorry we messed up. And we're going to do better, and we're going to try to protect you." And I didn't realize when I took this company over 14 years ago that I was going to be responsible for making sure that the electoral process was untainted by Facebook. I sort of admired his statement. I thought he did as well as he could.
A lot of the critics disagree with you. I'm not sure where I am on this, but he was criticized primarily in two ways. One was that it took so long for him to say something, and that secondly, it was a canned statement. The consultants in the room could analyze the statement better than I can. But I do tend to agree with Alan that this is an evolving circumstance on a still fledgling industry, meaning the internet. I'm reminded of when on the Media Project about 10 or so years ago, we talked about how Alan was always agitated about how reader comments were being handled or not handled by newspaper websites, and the comments that were allowed to get through shouldn't have been allowed to get through. And I remember saying at the time, you know, we're in the wild, wild west period of the internet, and this is going to evolve. And in fact, it has evolved. I suspect that this Facebook circumstance is going to be a landmark that will springboard Facebook into action and will put people on guard more so than they have been.
Well, you were brilliantly prescient, I must admit, Ira, about that. However,
which part? Or just all of it, as usual?
What you just said.
Oh.
But I have to say that it's not as easy as all of that, because
exactly.
We know that the Facebook model, right, is designed to get money,
right?
And this is the way they get money,
right?
So he's got to now decide. Look, there are people coming on and saying, eliminate Facebook from your apps. There are people, the stock has gone down dramatically. In fact, so dramatically, I think this is a very good time to buy it. But of course, I'm not a qualified financial person, so don't listen to me about anything. Because, you know, you're supposed to buy low,
right,
sell high,
right,
and all of that. So, but I think I'm looking to see if they can really come up with a fix for this.
You know, I think that Facebook will continue to remain relevant for as long until it doesn't. And they knew this was going on during the election. People were raising the issue about the Russian bots. They were raising all these other issues, and they sort of came out with some statements, but didn't really take responsibility. This is the furthest, you know, Facebook has ever gone. But I remember the words of Edward R. Murrow saying, "Television has the great ability to educate the people." And I remember when social media started, we all thought that this was a wonderful way of reaching out to people, you know, connecting with people, having constructive conversations. And of course, like with television, the social media has also uncovered the disgusting, horrible underbelly of our society, and people have used it, and just like the comments in the newspaper blogs, because I had one at the TU too, and it was unbelievable what people would say to me, you know, that there's a good and the bad to all of these kinds of technological advances. And Facebook, I think, and the rest of social media, because it's not just Facebook, I think they're under so much scrupulous because they're the biggest. But, you know, you've got Twitter, you've got Instagram, you've got other social media platforms that can also be used and also be manipulated. And they need to do a better job of protecting our data.
How?
Vet who it is that they're actually selling the data to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Teresa.
Well, I think what you said, Alan, earlier is really important. I listened to Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC last night, and she said something I thought was fascinating. She said that Facebook users need to understand that they're the product, mm-hmm, not the customer. And what Facebook is selling is its users.
Right.
And it's
right,
selling them. And people don't realize that. They don't think about it. They don't understand it that, mm-hmm, way. They, you know, the users are the product, not the customer.
So what's the way out, Teresa?
Well, I had a long conversation yesterday with Dr. Francine Berman. Fran Berman, she's an RPI professor. She's an expert in this. She leads something called the Research Data Alliance, a global effort to try to deal with data issues. And she was talking about how the European Commission has a whole digital rights agenda, and that in Europe, this is the user, the individual's rights are considered as much as other people's rights are as well. And she and Vint Cerf, he's the chief evangelist at Google, essentially the father of the internet, they jointly wrote a piece about a year ago just talking about how you need some sort of rules of the road, essentially. You need an ethical guidelines for the use of these data. You need some social norms for
who's
the use
gonna
of
do
these
that?
Data. Well, they're doing it more in Europe than they are doing it here.
Our information, personal information, is much more highly protected in Europe than they are here. And that's
right,
one of the good reasons why, you know, law enforcement in Britain is also looking at this in terms of the impact that it had on Brexit, because their laws are so much more stringent about protecting personal information.
Can you tell us a little bit about what they do, either of you?
What,
in other words, you're
does?
Saying that they do it better in England. They do it better not in the States. So what is it that they do? I mean, can they really control millions and billions of people writing online?
I think it's an after-the-fact thing. I think their laws are stronger in terms of protecting, from what I've read, personal information. But it will end up being in court, and someone will end up paying for what happened. So it's an after-the-fact thing, because Facebook was compromised and they were able to exploit it for both Trump and for Brexit. And it was the same group of folks.
So here's something.
Go ahead.
Here's something that Facebook did do, which they, you know, under pressure in 2015, which is that before you could do what Cambridge Analytica did. You could send out this app and buried in the all, you know, the thing that you click on and approve, the terms of service is that we have the right to take your information and all your friends' information.
Right.
So since 2015, they haven't allowed people to do that. What you could do is require that if you're going to take people's information, you can't bury that in the terms of service. You'd have to have a banner or something that pops up and says, you know, by agreeing to this, we are going to take your information, or we're going to take this information and have a right to refuse. There are ways that you can notify so you have informed consumers.
Good luck, Charlie. You never see the end of the drug ads, the incredible
yes.
number of drug ads,
right.
when they tell you all the ways you could die if you take this medication. Right. We know what that's
You know,
about.
From the first day that I sat behind a computer in my office some, I don't know how many decades ago.
Seven or eight.
Yeah, it was a little bit longer ago than that. And we were told, and we tried to admonish all of our employees over the years, don't type anything into your computer that you don't want to see on the big scoreboard at a football stadium.
We once, have it in our handbook, right, Joe? Don't
once,
we have something like that?
Once
yeah,
that,
not,
once
not
that
those
is,
words exactly, but,
right.
but close enough. Yeah.
Once it's in the internet, you're free to be copied, and your information's going to get out there. I think two things. One is all of the stories I've read about this say that Cambridge improperly accessed mm-hmm. this information. I mean, if using the now, I don't know if that legally falls into
well,
the
that's
head.
What I was going to
they
ask.
Violated Facebook's
it
terms
seems
of service.
Like we're, it seems like we're, and I'm by the way, I'm not using, I'm not saying that Facebook is
right.
not culpable
right.
here. But by the same token, it seems like we're making a lot bigger deal about Facebook than we are about Cambridge
Couldn't
Analytica.
Couldn't agree more. That's there's your villain in this piece.
Absolutely.
And so Facebook to Alan's. I don't know how they're going to do this so that people are more protected, but you know the government writ large is trying to figure out ways to block Russian hacking, for example.
Wait,
and
we got a president. Wait.
Well,
we
I know
we
you
got a president who's.
I'm not sure.
Well,
I'm sure that
we
I
don't
leave,
want to drift into that.
Leave
yet.
This into the hands of this particular.
No, but my point is that
there are some people within the government who are trying to do
and
that.
And that they're going to have to find a way. How are they going to do it? I don't know. Maybe they won't be able to. But I'm confident that there is a way to do it. And similarly, there are a lot of smart people at Facebook, and I suspect that they're going to figure out a way so that this doesn't happen again.
Well, look, I'm sick and tired of all you people doing the kinds of things that you do, which is to consistently say what happened, what's wrong. I challenge you to come up instead of just blasé-ly saying, they'll figure it out. A, whether it is in their self-interest to figure it out because it's going to cost them a lot of business. What'd you say?
It's not, again, that the users are the product, not the customer.
Right.
But except if people start, you know, they lost $50 billion
and the
market's down again to the futures market is down again today. That's probably China, but is it also Facebook? Who knows?
But if users are their commodity and their product and people leave Facebook, they won't. They're losing their product.
Which, by the way, it's very complicated to leave Facebook, but the Washington Post, New York Times, and a number of people online have instructions on how to do it. It's very difficult, but
you can
do it.
Well, you could, but on the other hand, you could also not just not use it.
You could
it,
just not go on, right.
But
right.
you
yeah,
can
but still
you,
have your data.
Right, you can take your data off, but it's complicated, but if you want to know how, you can. But the other thing, Helen, this notion that it's Cambridge Analytica, not Facebook, well, maybe, except for just remember that Peter Thiel is on Facebook's board. Peter Thiel, close to Trump, major Trump funder. Facebook embedded staff into the Trump campaign. Mm-hmm. Brad Pascal, who ran the digital operations, bragged about that. He's now, you know, over leading the Trump 2020 campaign. What's that all about, by the way? And you know, the other thing we have to step back and think about is, what is the interconnection with the Russians here? That's what I'm most concerned about. You know,
sure.
we have a big picture issue that affects all of us, and then we have a very specific issue is, was this part of the Russians' route in?
Well, you know, to your point, Facebook was also at the CPAC convention recently, you know, tabling or, you know, doing displays and trying to get business from them. You know, the thing is, I use Facebook extensively, and my rule is don't put anything up there that you don't want your mother to see. But, you know, you can target people based on the interest that people have put in. So, you know, I use it for my clients, and I'm able to put in different kinds of interests that they have, whether it's mental health or animals or whatever else it is.
Libraries.
You know, right, bluegrass, whatever you'd like. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It has to do with how it's used. And, you know, I think Facebook will respond and make some changes, but the only way that this will stop, in a sense, is if everyone en masse leaves Facebook.
But the other thing
is going to happen.
The other thing, Libby, is this is also a generational issue. I think younger people don't have as much concern about digital privacy.
They don't.
They don't think about it. I don't think most people think about it. I'll go back to my conversation with Dr. Fran Berman. You know, people. We just had this issue the other day with the driverless car, right? Hit somebody, right? Or what are the rules? What are the ethical rules around that? Who owns your data? You use one of those health apps, and it collects all sorts of information on you. Who owns that data? Who has a right to that data? Or you have one of those, what do you call it? I don't want to name names, but what do you call those Alexis things? You know, what do you, that in your house?
Oh, the Google.
Oh, Alexa.
The things you talk to.
Alexa,
or,
Google.
Okay, I don't want to name names.
Or
right.
Siri. I talk to Siri.
You have one of those things. They're collecting data on you all the time. All the time. And when you use that, you've signed away the rights for them to use and share and sell that data. People are having data collected on them constantly in ways that they're not even thinking about. And we don't really have an ethical framework for this. And the technology is moving so fast, the regulators, I don't think that they have the capacity to keep up because the technology is moving so fast.
I'm just going to go back to my original point. We are in the nascent period.
This is just the beginning.
Just the beginning.
Let's pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll have letters as well. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back, friends. We are midst of a conversation, and we love to join you, have you join us in the conversation. All you have to do is write to us. It's panel at WAMC.org. It's simple as that. Alan has some examples of people who have joined in on the conversation. They have some things to say, so we'll read those, and then we'll move on and talk about some other stuff.
Okay, Glenn asks this very good question. Can you discuss the Mercer investment and influence on Facebook? I wondered, because I know nothing of it. Does anybody else?
I'm assuming Teresa, who knows of all things Mercer, would know about this.
The investment that I know is that Mercer and Bannon own Cambridge Analytica.
Right.
They created Cambridge Analytica, and this work was done before they teamed up with Trump. So they built this model. They did this modeling. And they tested words. This is according to Wiley, the whistleblower, that they tested things like drain the swamp and
Wiley Coyote
and various political terms. And they began to find out, you know, where they could target key people. And then Trump campaign was floundering a bit. They came in, Mercer came in and agreed to fund the Trump campaign, but only if they brought on Bannon, Kellyanne Conway, and Boyce. And then they also had to work with Cambridge Analytica. So Brad Pascal, who was down in Texas, started working with Cambridge Analytica using their models. And then they embedded Facebook into that campaign effort. Wow. I don't know of any direct funding of, I don't know one way or the other if Mercer's fund Facebook. I do know that Peter Thiel, who is very close to Trump and funded his campaign, is on the Facebook board.
If there was no Facebook and this was and there was no internet, and you guys would know this because you've been in the business for a longer time, wouldn't there be somebody doing what Cambridge Analytica did and taking advantage of some other organization? In other words, the kind of what their goal was here is as old as politics.
It's advertising. It's as old as advertising. And, you know, you had you had the first advertising executive to get involved in a campaign was Eisenhower, and then Kennedy really perfected it. It goes back decades. So it's about the information that advertising companies had around people and what they thought based on what they were able to gather at that point. And so this is sort of a natural extension of that we've, you know, come this far. But people were able to do targeted direct mail.
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember, I've done it. You do mail to women. Women, prime voters, Democrats with a certain message. You do mail, you buy lists. You can buy the NRA list. You can buy all kinds of mailing lists. You merge and purge it with the data, with the voter data that you have, and then you're able to target mail. That's how it was done.
But I guess the
You know, Libby, that's brilliant, because I remember during the first Mario campaign, a political consultant told me that they got everybody's name out of the phone book whose name ended in a vowel.
Right, right.
And that they targeted those people.
Right, now you can get
the
list.
And the letter said, it's our turn.
Yeah, and our the people that I work with in terms of data like this, when I get some data back, there's surname guesses, you know, that this is a Hispanic surname or this is a WASP surname or a Jewish surname.
So now we flash forward to today's technology, and at Facebook, I think we'll be able to fix it, and it won't happen again until it happens again. When there's new technology and ways of accessing this information. That doesn't mean we should be not outraged perhaps by it, but let's...
But there'll always be somebody gaming the system.
Right. I understand that happened. I mean, I think back in 92 presidential campaign, I worked in New Hampshire for the Bill Clinton campaign, and they targeted 300 French Canadians. And my folks who spoke French, they came in on election day and did get out the vote in French to those 300 French Canadians in the northern part of the district. It was fascinating.
Interesting.
However, what's different that Cambridge Analytica reportedly did in the Trump campaign is, did they send false information? Did they identify, first of all, did they collect this information contrary to the service agreements? And then did they send false information? There's an interesting piece in Medium. There's been a lot of discussion. How does this differ from what the Obama campaign did in 2012? The Obama campaign data scientist, he wrote a piece published last night. Jim Hendler sent this to me. He's another professor at RPI who's brilliant on these issues. And, you know, why what Cambridge Analytica did was unacceptable. And it describes how what they did was different. It was different in how they collected the information. They made it clear they were from a campaign. And it was different in how they used the information, what they sent to them. I tweeted it out at T. Bush, or you can find it on Medium.
At
T-B-O-U-G. If you're on Twitter, at T-B-O-U-G.
I like my T-Burge medium rare.
T-Burge.
At T-Burge. But it's an...
My tea with a lovely red bush, actually.
Baked potato.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's interesting because there's been a lot of discussion, and I saw, you know, lots of the Republicans are saying, well, they didn't do anything different than what the Obama folks did. Well, this outlines how it was different.
But Teresa and Libby and Ira, wasn't there a basic problem that they were dishonest with Facebook also?
Yes.
Cambridge Analytica was
they were dishonest.
That's where the focus should be.
Right.
The Facebook problem is a byproduct, but these are the guys who should be vilified.
But if it's a byproduct, they were sitting right there with them. How can they say they didn't know this? And they've known for 2 years, and they only did something when the New York Times and the Guardian and then the TV4. Boy, if you haven't gone to listen to the TV4.
That's unbelievable.
Interviews. Not interviews. What would you call them?
They were undercover.
Discussion. Discussions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right.
Go listen to TV4.
Are you talking about the guys around the bar?
Yeah.
Go listen to those if you want to wonder if this was right or wrong.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on with the letters. Is that okay with everybody?
Yes.
Alan,
I'm looking forward to
them.
You
must have one that says Alan was right.
No, not yet.
It's coming now, though.
Amy says, Facebook can't even get it together to answer customer service inquiries. I don't think they'll bother to contact everyone who had their data breached. I would say that's a fair estimate.
It's very hard to get a hold of a person.
Yeah. Scott says, Facebook, isn't it a waste of money to fund the NSA when Facebook, Google are collecting all the volunteer data? And that's from Scott. And then Robert says, Facebook, Twitter, Google, etc., all work on the premise of a free lunch, no charge for the service. And there is no such thing as a free lunch in business. And you made that point several times, Teresa.
Again,
and,
the users are the product, not the customer.
Right. And James says, as bad as what Facebook and Cambridge Analytica did, my biggest concern is that people who didn't use the app had their data stolen also. If a Facebook member wanted to download and use an app, I agree they should be informed about the data being used. That's on the member. I, as a friend of this member, should not be a target also, from James.
And I'm not an expert in this, but as I understand it, that process was shut down in 2015. Facebook blocked people from doing that since 2015.
Blocked people from doing what?
Users from, if you have an app,
yes,
you can only take the person's data, not their
right.
friend's data.
However, you can.
But I don't
you
believe.
You can promote within Facebook a post to
urge people.
People
to,
who are like your page, as well as their friends, right. just so you know.
Right.
I use that all the time.
There are ways around it.
All right.
Okay. Hi, panel, says Simone. Just to set the record straight, yesterday there was someone who mentioned that if you are under 35, you don't care about your privacy. I think that happened today, too.
I didn't give a age.
Yeah, right. You're
didn't
exactly
really matter,
right.
Huh?
You're as pure as the driven snow. Today, I heard something about... Today I heard something about a generational gap, and if you're a younger generation, you don't care about your privacy. My husband and I, and most of our friends, are in our late 20s. We care.
Thank you.
We're not on Facebook at this moment. I do not have Alexa or Siri, etc., and thanks. There's an old Yiddish expression. It goes, for example, stinks. Yeah, it's true that you may be representative of a small group, right, of people who don't care. But I think when we make certain generalizations, we do know that people don't care. Listen, I talk to young people all the time, and the lack of knowledge is just appalling.
Let me say it differently. Those people who use these technologies, it's my understanding that they have a whole different view of their. And I think a lot of people just don't even think about what data they're giving away.
Well, when you sign that thing at the end when it says, I agree,
yeah, that's
what do you think you're talking about? Yeah.
I don't think people know that they're collecting. Like the people who use these health things.
Of course they don't know.
They
that.
Don't think about the fact that they're collecting that could be sold to their insurance company and or others. Their employer could buy that information to know, you know, or these apps that tell you what you're in your refrigerator so you know what to go buy shopping. You know, is that going to be sold to your insurance company because you don't
eat healthily. You got nothing there. What about the potential for blackmail and all the rest of that stuff? I mean, you know, years ago, I talked to a cable executive, and we were talking about what they knew about the people who were watching on the cable. He says, you know, I have no idea.
Right. Or everyone you call. Everybody you call.
I mean, it's as simple as this. You go to your supermarket and you have the barcode because you've got your card, a card-carrying member of whatever your supermarket is, right?
Right.
They're
right.
tracking what you're purchasing, and then you get flyers in the mail specifically for those products.
I have another crazy example. I was driving to Rockland County a couple of weeks ago, and I needed my GPS because I wasn't exactly sure where it was. Yeah. And I was driving down the thruway, and the direction from the GPS said, bear to the left so that you'll go through the express lane at Harriman, where you don't have to stop to pay mm-hmm. the toll. Well, how did that know that I had a easy pass?
Oh, that's good.
That's good.
How did it know? What if they told everybody that? They just like
screwed you. Yeah.
Well, no, everybody, I think now you can go through and then they take a shot of your
license
plate
well,
and they'll bill you.
The entire throughway is going to be right. like that.
That's the way it is on the Mass Pike. It's great.
Well, I live in a good state, Massachusetts, where they got.
Yeah.
On the other hand, think about the poor guys who used to collect tolls.
Well, that's the thing. I used to, before they made the instant where you could throw the change in, you know?
Poor people who collected
right.
the tolls.
I used to, even when they had the change collector things, I used to go to
hold
the person
to
hand it to somebody to protect their job.
All right.
And then they got angry with me. But then they got angry with me and said, well, you could do an exact change over there. I'm like, okay.
But I'm trying to keep your job.
All right. I just, we have to take a break. I just want it to be said before we go, please know Alan lives in the better state.
And And I was there yesterday, and it's lovely on the Mass
lovely.
Pike.
Lovely. The Commonwealth is lovely.
Right.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss, and that should be painfully obvious. We have a lot to talk about. We will do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We have Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post making up the group this morning. We're going to go to roll through the letters here and then move on to
okay,
some other
Joe,
topics.
Okay, Joe, but before we do, because I love Ricky Skaggs so much, where is he appearing?
He is not, and that wasn't Ricky Skaggs.
Oh, it wasn't?
No.
So we got it all wrong?
That was Tony Rice.
Oh, he's great, too. I love Tony Rice.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. John says, data and Facebook. There is a pretty simple solution. Allow people to opt for a subscription fee, much like the ad-free experience options you see on YouTube. If you want to protect your data, pay a small fee, $5 a month, perhaps another question mark, and they won't share it all. Makes you a customer instead of a product. Easy for you to say, I say. In other words, that destroys their business model, and I have a feeling they're going to be loath to do that.
It'd be interesting to, Libby, do you know, is there anything that competes with Facebook? I'm not.
Well, I mean, Facebook is the largest social media platform, and they own Instagram. Twitter is
different.
Not as Twitter's large.
Different.
It's Twitter is different, but it is a competitor for eyeballs, that's for sure. But, you know, when I talk to clients, it's really Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. That's it.
Sheldon, who's a man I very much admire, why should we trust them, he says. They signed a consent decree and didn't live up to it. They need strict oversight. That's from Sheldon. Okay. And Nancy said, not to defend Mr. Mark Z, but most people post and repost thousands of items on Facebook and willingly share personal info. Why are we surprised that Facebook is a virtual toilet being flushed into the world's living rooms? People under no compulsion share the good, bad, and ugly and open themselves up to a world of opinion and misconceptions. Great show. True news.
There's a mental picture I'm not going to be able to erase for a while.
Down the toilet?
Yeah, in the living rooms.
Yeah, well, toilets are playing more and more of a role in some of my considerations. For example, you know,
no.
We now have stink.
Just no.
We now have stink bugs in our house.
Oh.
So then, what do you do with a stink bug?
You never squish a stink bug.
You pick it up and you put it outside. That's what I do.
Yeah, you don't want to squish a stink bug.
No, because that's when you get the stink.
Exactly, and it just doesn't
right.
go away.
Although the stink isn't really that bad.
Oh. Lessons for life. You will never squish a stink bug.
That's a metaphor for something, I'm sure. Yeah. And the next letter?
Somebody's embroidering a sampler of that right now.
You know there's going to be stink bug fans.
Hi, panel.
Hi.
Zuck sucks. Zuckerberg may have credit.
I don't. Can you say that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we just did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Zuck's okay. Go ahead.
A vacuum cleaner sucks air. Okay. Zuckerberg may have crafted his apology as best as he possibly could, but he has a long history of being tied to and in bed with the Russian oligarchs. Yuri Milner gave him $200 million for no stakes, capitalized no stakes in his company. So I believe he has more nefarious interests than he claims, and that's from Darian. Well, we can't speak for any of that because we don't know, right? I mean, you say anything you want, we might read the letter, but that doesn't mean it's right or wrong. Sharon says, user info privacy. Buenos dias, Pano. Crazy idea. But since nobody in CAPS reads disclosure sign-on agreements, and everyone in CAPS knows that nobody reads them, and if, in CAPS, given a choice, everybody in CAPS would most likely choose to keep their information private, how about having the default be to keep our information private and that you need to sign up to have your information made available? I know this will never happen because, unfortunately and so sadly, I agree with you that the users are just a product, an issue for the Consumer Protection Agency, perhaps under Donald Trump, the Consumer Protection Agency.
Zero funded.
Is there one?
But they are under a decree of the 2011 Facebook of the Federal Trade Commission. They had a consent decree, which apparently they've not been following, and so they're going to have to revisit the Federal Trade Commission as part of this.
Yeah, this is the Trump Federal Trade
Commission.
Okay, here we go. Peter says, why it's hard to leave Facebook. It's because, and here comes the capitals, even if you stop using it, they have already put cookies on your computer that allow them to track your internet activity when you're not on Facebook. It's frankly more nefarious than we even suspected. Can't decide yet whether it's time to sell my shares because 2 billion monthly active users means more of them are outside the U.S. than in it. Great show, says Peter. But I have a question for you guys about this because I don't know about the cookies. I'm always worried about cookies. I don't eat them. Too much sugar. But the cookies, you know, that you get.
Not the oatmeal raisin I like to eat.
No, but no, you can.
Black and whites.
But you can.
Yes.
Black and whites. Oh, for God's sakes. Please, go. Please.
Okay, so here's. Sorry. Here's my question about cookies, because I'm an old man, and I really want to know how to get rid of them. But you can go on.
You clear your cache.
You clear your. Yeah.
And how do you do that?
You go into settings. I'll show you later. Yeah. But you go into settings and you clear your history. You clear the whole cache. What you need to make sure is if you're saving any passwords that you'd say don't. You check off that so that you save your passwords. But I can show you later.
So now at the end, when you're on, there's a little two boxes on the right hand side at the bottom, and if you click on that. You can eliminate a lot of those things doing it that way, can't you?
Well your boxes may vary, but yes.
Right, but I need to know what browser you're working on.
Here we go.
The writer talks about the stock and whether he or she should sell the stock. What's my understanding of what is driving down the Facebook stock is not the outrage over the information being stolen, but the prospect of new regulation coming in.
Exactly.
And that's what people are afraid of, and that they think Facebook will be less valuable because it's going to be regulated.
Because they won't be able to sell his data as easily. Right.
That's very interesting, Ira. And it's also why every time you get an argument for gun control, people go out and buy guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And what's interesting, I know we're going to get to this in the budget, that they've cleared the way for the feds to do, the CDC, to do research on gun violence.
At long last.
At long last.
Yeah. Who did that?
The new budget.
It explicitly allows the federal government to fund research on gun violence and the public health aspects of gun violence.
Which is something the NRA has railed against for
major,
years.
And
it's
so
a
this is
major victory.
A talking point, right?
Yes.
For those people who really want to get out from under this.
Well, it's a talking point for Trump to say, look, I'm doing something.
Well, I think they took it in. I don't think that.
They didn't block it because of that, right? But he'll use it. Right. Let's be real.
It'll be interesting to see if they end up having to stay in over the weekend with all those kids in town in Washington marching.
Jill writes, "Follow the money. I have not seen or heard on any or in any media format how Facebook benefited financially from their Cambridge Analytica connection, either directly or indirectly, and this has me baffled. What are your thoughts? What do you know? Teresa?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that.
So they want to know how Facebook made out as a result of their relationship with Cambridge Analytica. So the question is, I've not seen or heard in any media format how Facebook benefited financially from their Cambridge Analytical connection, either directly or indirectly, and this has me baffled. What do you know?
Facebook?
Well, they bought the data. I mean, Cambridge Analytica bought the data.
Not the point. It's all the ads that they bought on Facebook.
Right.
There was all these ads that went out.
Millions.
And millions of dollars. That's how Facebook really made the money.
Because remember,
The
Trump campaign put very little money in TV advertising.
Right.
Where they said, and Brad Pascal, again, he said this in advance and then bragged about it after, that they thought that Twitter was where the conversation would be, but Facebook is where they would win the election, and they put their money, advertising money, in Facebook. Do you even know if there are the numbers that are public? But they put millions of dollars into Facebook ads. That's where they, instead of TV, they put it in Facebook. Right. So yes, Facebook made a lot. Why did they embed two or three staffers?
Right.
All right. Let us take a break, and then when we come back, we will go on to many other. We have the budget to talk about, right? We have the budget to talk about. Right.
This is Teresa's day. She's been waiting for this.
We
finally have a budget.
The budget
that's risen to the top.
We want to find out if Libby's a qualified lesbian.
She is. She took a test.
I think, honey, I know the answer to this.
Really? And what would your test be to find out? Let's go to a break, shall we?
No one is going to win in the answers to these questions.
Fortunately, this is not a glass table.
I wear jeans every day, Ira. It wouldn't matter. And you don't want to look at my knees.
Jody says now embarrassed.
I was going to say I wanted to talk about Congresswoman's Slaughter's legend.
Yes, babe.
When I realized that you and I shop at the same place for our clothes.
That's right. In the same department, too.
Same department. That's right. Exactly. All right. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning. It's the 22nd of March. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post make up the group. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me move on to some other topics. We have a lot to talk about. One being the budget. We have a spending bill. Congressional negotiators reach a deal on a $1.3 trillion spending plan ahead of Friday's government shutdown deadline. They did it before the deadline. Congressional leaders reached the spending deal to keep government agencies operating through September, unveiling legislation that would make good on President Trump's promises to increase military funding while blocking much of his immigration agenda. The release of the 2,000-plus page bill Wednesday evening after a two-day delay touched off a legislative sprint as lawmakers try to pass it before Friday night, the deadline to avoid a government shutdown. And with a key senator unwilling to say whether he would agree to accelerate the deal's consideration, it remained uncertain whether they would be able to meet the challenge. The members know what it is at stake, according to the House Majority Whip Steve Scalise. And we have to pay our troops and support our president. And there were other plot twists as the deal came together, as aides hashed out its final details on Wednesday afternoon. Teresa, as our budget expert, what do you make of this?
It'll be interesting to see. I think that they're probably going to have to do either a short-term continuing resolution to get through the weekend. I don't see how they pass this by Friday night, just process-wise. But it looks like they struck a deal. And the other question is, will Trump in the end stay with it? Apparently they had a deal. They thought that they'd been negotiating with the Trump team, and then midday yesterday all of a sudden he was saying no, he wasn't for the deal. So the Speaker Ryan and McConnell had to go up and go to the White House and get him to agree again. But on balance, some things you don't like, some things you do like, so I guess it's a good deal.
Well, you know, I mean, look, if the Republicans had their way when Obama was the president, they never would have agreed to a budget of this kind, a spending plan of this kind. So it just shows what hypocrites they are.
And also, it's so huge, we'll have to wait to see what's actually in it. So, for instance, I read the IRS, you know, they made a big point. They'd been trying to defund the IRS, and they said, well, they put money back in. Well, as it turns out, if what I read is correct, they put back money to implement this new tax giveaway or tax breaks, but they cut the funding for enforcement. And because there had been efforts under the Obama administration to do better enforcement, particularly those at the top end, to stop the tax cheats. So they deeply cut that. They did put money back in the Trump administration, Betsy DeVos pushing really hard to have deep cuts in the education funding. And they did not follow that lead. They put money back for education. They did fund the arts and humanities.
And NPR.
NPR.
Well, not NPR, actually, but Corporation.
Corporation. Big Bird, Safe, again. As we talked about, they did put in money to improve the NIC system, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, so that you can do a better job of checking for in advance of gun sales. A lot of money in there to harden schools. Not a lot of money in there to improve schools, the infrastructure of schools. So
isn't it fair to say, particularly for those people who are progressives, who might be wary of a budget coming out of Congress, that if Schumer is as effusive about this budget as he was, that we have a decent budget that was reached by compromise, and that's what we've been asking for our Congress to do for more than one Congress. And there may be things that individually we will see in this budget that we perhaps don't like, but there is apparently a compromise budget as a result.
So, right. So the effort has been to get a budget that would go through the House that the Freedom Caucus would support, the far, far right, right? So this is not going to get the support of the Freedom Caucus. It's going to require Democrats to pass it. So that is a more balanced budget. Now, who knows? We're going to find out over the next few days what's actually in it. This is the kind of thing that should be debated over weeks before they actually pass it, because I'm sure there's a lot of hidden stuff in there.
Is it veto proof?
Well, it just will Trump hold to his word to sign it? There is money in there for the Federal Election Assistance Commission, $380 million to improve election-related cybersecurity. There is $300 million in there, counterintelligence money to combat Russian hacking, so some stuff that he may not like. There's a $1.6 billion for the border wall, but there's a lot of restrictions on how you can use that money, which he's not happy about.
Is there a revenue line offset? Is there a revenue line for $1.6 million that Mexico is going to put back in?
Right. That's the thing that he was pushing. He wanted money for the border wall, and he didn't want money for the Gateway Project. Apparently, they're having money specifically for the New York City, and Alan, you can talk more about the Gateway Project.
Well, it does look like, I'm sorry, there's not much to say. It does look like Schumer.
But what it is, not everyone
Schumer
knows.
Well, there's a Gateway Project, which is obviously good for New York, and it creates.
Well, it's a new tunnel from New Jersey.
Well, that's part of it. Yeah. That's part of it. Yeah, that's right. They've been after it. Chris Christie said absolutely not. He didn't want it. He's the New Jersey side. He's gone now. And Schumer got a ton of stuff for New York State. Right. That's why it's good to have the majority leader coming from your state, or the minority leader.
Right. And there's money in there for opioid crisis. It's not good for health care. They didn't shore up the funding for health care. It's really bad for health care. It'll be interesting. Will Rand Paul filibuster? Because if you care about budget deficits, this in combination with the tax package, you have pretty growing deficits. So Rand Paul, it's the kind of thing he would filibuster. Will he? It'll keep them in over the weekend when you have all those students in Washington. They want to leave by Friday and head home for a 2-week recess and not be in Washington on Saturday when the young people are marching on the gun issue. We'll see.
Why will it take so long? How long should it take for this? You say it can't be done right away.
To be done in a proper order, they needed to file the bill by last Sunday evening. Because a bill has to be printed, it has to be read, there's a whole series of procedures. So now, to expedite this, because you have a Friday night deadline, they're going to have a series of votes that essentially allow them to not follow the rules. So they'll vote to, there'll be a series of votes that say we don't have to follow the rules. So the budget bill has to begin in the House. So this will be introduced in the House. The House will pass it. It'll go to the Senate. The Senate will pass it. It will go to the President. But to do that in this short of a time, because there are rules about how long before, something has to be printed, it has to be published, it has to be read, you have to have time. So they're going to bypass all those rules, and that will require people to vote to do that. And people like Rand Paul may not vote to do that. They may filibuster those votes.
All right. So that is the budget subject. We will move on to other subjects, too, because I want to get as much in.
That was brilliant, Teresa. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Alan.
She's been saving it up after all
I just think it's stunning that you have a $1.3 trillion budget and you haven't really debated these issues. But I'm sure that's why, Ryan and McConnell and probably even Schumer glad to do it under the cover of Donald Trump's tweets.
Even in less controversial times, and I know you've been making that point for weeks that we should be talking about the budget. If Trump and all of his issues was not the headlines daily, there'd be something else. But the public does not ruminate over these budgets, certainly not as much as you would like or as you do. And that's just a fact. I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just a fact. If we weren't talking about Trump and the budget negotiations were going on, we would have been talking about something else.
Well, in the past, the determinations would be over parts of the budget. So the majority of it would go unnoticed. But say, you know, I remember once we had a huge fight to cut Medicare or not, to cut Medicaid or not, to cut school lunches or not, to cut education funding, or there was a whole college funding issue. So there are often fights over some part of the budget that people focus on. But what's in the, you know, people don't realize the HUD budget, there isn't enough funding. There's a huge backlog of improvements of housing.
I mean, all I can tell you is in the good old days of newspapers, when headlines sold newspapers, all you had to do if you didn't want to sell a lot of newspapers was put a budget story across the
top. Right, about what the priority is
going to
be.
It's just people.
Same thing goes for New York State, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. The other topic I wanted to get to was the Brennan story, which I find interesting, and I'm hoping you will all weigh in on, which is that which is the ex-chief of the CIA is now suggesting that Putin may have compromising information on Trump. We've all sort of been speculating on this.
Well, wait. I said that before, the ex-chief of the CIA.
I was
right here, right up front doing.
Oh, okay.
That.
Okay. All right. But the issue here is.
As much as we love you.
Yes, you were not the only one.
You were not.
But, okay.
But the issue here is what it set off furious speculation about whether the former spy chief was basing that assertion on inside information.
Of course he was.
Not that you weren't, of course, but that perhaps he would be.
I was doing one and one and one and one. Obviously, here comes. Look, I'm going to go over it one more time, and then I'm done.
You sure?
No.
No.
But then what happened was it starts with Trump getting unexpectedly elected. He starts talking about how wonderful Putin is, how wonderful the Russians are. During the campaign, I would like the Russians to deliver as much information about Hillary's purloined emails as possible, and all of that. And then he was over there, and what was that? He was taking some kind of shower or something like that, and over a
golden shower.
Oh, that's right, that's the one.
How did we get there?
Over in Moscow.
Easy, we're talking about Donald Trump.
Okay, so read the famous memo. What do you call that?
The dossier.
The dossier. It's all there. And by the way, so far all of that is holding up.
Yes. So and all these women coming forward.
So all of that is holding up. Okay. So now, what do the Russians have on Trump? That no matter what his advisors are telling him, shut up, don't talk about the Russians, don't do that. He continually does it. Is there a potential for Manchurian candidate, otherwise known as blackmail?
Two CNN hosts said things yesterday that I thought were interesting. One, Anderson Cooper said, Putin is the only person who has been on the scene who doesn't have a nickname. Everybody else comes into into some contact with has a nickname.
Nor does Stormy Daniels.
True.
He's not said anything about that.
He's not said anything about that. Also, Jake Tapper said, I would just like it on the record that Donald Trump has been much nastier and meaner to me in the last year and a half than he has been ever to Vladimir Putin. So, what do we make of the former CIA chiefs?
I think he's got something.
He's good. Alan has outlined it. I think the only question about Trump and Russia is what exactly it is, and it just seems to be one or more things that's just keeping him quiet. I don't know, everybody has concluded that. I mean, you watch Sarah Sanders snarling at the podium the other day and was not able to say that this country disapproves of the way that Russia conducted its election. What does she say? Well, that's none of our business. They're conducting their own election. I mean, this is a country that has stood up for democracy, has called out countries around the world that have conducted fraudulent.
You say this meaning you're talking about the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So
we're talking about Russia.
So we don't know, but and we don't even know what Brennan does or doesn't know. But boy, it's pretty safe to presume that Brennan is basing his comments on information that he has been able to ascertain.
Right. It would be very hard for him to come forward with the specific information because it would probably compromise our so-called assets on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can't. And Clapper also, but it was interesting to me, the pushback was, well, Barack Obama called and congratulated Putin also, right? But the difference is that was before Putin going into the Ukraine. That was, I mean, Crimea. That was before Putin interfered, the Russians interfered with our elections. It's before they used nerve gas in Britain to kill somebody. And I won't make a mistake and say London today.
It was also in consultation with the State Department and the National Security Council.
And this notion that, you know, whether or not they leaked, they try to fuzzy it up by saying the problem yesterday was that this information, that his briefing got leaked. Well, the President of the United States of America should not have to be told that you don't congratulate him given what's going on. They should just intuitively know that.
All right. So former New York City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, an openly gay supporter of Governor Andrew Cuomo, called Cynthia Nixon, who announced her candidacy for governor of the Empire State this week. She called her an unqualified lesbian. After Nixon announced that she's going to challenge the governor in a primary. In an interview with the New York Post, Quinn also denounced Nixon for endorsing Bill de Blasio over her in the 2013 Democratic primary for mayor. We teased this at the top of the hour. Libby, what makes you a qualified lesbian? Any idea?
Yeah, I do have some ideas, but we really can't talk about it on the air.
If you're a man, that would be one thing.
You have to take a test, don't you?
Yes, and I want everyone to know that I took my test in 1978,
okay,
and I passed the boards.
All right, let me rephrase the question. What makes Cynthia Nixon an unqualified lesbian?
Nothing. I mean, the notion of somebody as a the notion of using unqualified and lesbian in the same sentence is just downright insane. And it's caused a great deal of humor to be spread across the web. I have a friend in L.A. who said, am I an unqualified lesbian? I haven't had a date in 4 years. So, you know, I think that Chris Quinn
was... If you
want
to say you're unqualified to be governor of New York,
I think
fine.
Chris Quinn should have chosen her words more carefully.
She tried to walk it back.
Yeah, she has tried to walk it back. And I think that Chris Quinn is angry at Cynthia Nixon because she did, as a lesbian, Chris Quinn is a lesbian, Cynthia is a lesbian, that Cynthia didn't support her run for New York City mayor. She supported Bill de Blasio. And I think that this is one way Chris Quinn getting back and never forgetting. Chris Quinn does support the governor. But I think it was an unfortunate turn of phrase, but it has made for a great deal of humor and fun across all of my friends and across Facebook and every other social media site. Quinn has walked it back, but the question is not if whether or not Cynthia Nixon is an unqualified lesbian. The question is, do we really need another celebrity apprentice elected official? That's my issue here. It's time for us to look for people. I mean, I know Cynthia Nixon's an activist and all that sort of stuff, and I'm not saying, you know, oh, we have to vote for Andrew Cuomo. That's not the issue here. The issue here is getting people engaged in politics from a local level on up. If she wants to run for something, run for city council.
Excuse me, Libby, I desperately disagree with you.
Okay.
I think it's perfectly appropriate for anybody to run for any political office they want if they're taken seriously. I think Cynthia Nixon is causing great consternation to Andrew Cuomo. And here's why. Because she is going to run a campaign in which things that Cuomo would have liked forgotten, for example, the Prococo trial, mm-hmm, and the trials that are coming up, she's going to raise those every day. I think Cuomo thought he had had a free pass on Prococo. It happened. The thing happened. He stood up and he said, this is personally painful for me. Goodbye. So long. It's not there anymore. But there is an issue. And the issue is he responsible for what's going on in his administration? He said he would be. He promised he would be. And more, this stuff looks dirty.
Great. And she wins. Say she wins in a primary.
Yeah.
Probably not likely.
Right.
Mark Molinari Molinaro will wipe the floor with her, and we will have a Republican as a governor.
Well, you know, everybody said that about Trump. Everybody's saying that about Bernie. You can't make those assumptions the time. I think
this is New York.
Excuse me. I think she is a very attractive candidate, and I don't mean that physically. I mean she's attractive in that she's raising the right issues. She's talking about more aid to education. She's talking about each of those categories that many of us feel very strongly about.
So even if she can't win, she'll change the conversation or broaden the conversation. Is that what you're suggesting?
Maybe.
That is, of course, not right of you, because what you're trying to do is put words in my mouth.
No, I'm asking you. Is that what you're saying? Or you think she can win?
I'm thinking that with an outside chance, look, we saw Zephyr Teachout with zero money, who, by the way, is, I believe, a treasurer of the campaign,
yes.
Get 33% of the vote, mostly upstate. I think Cynthia Nixon is going to have a lot. Remember that the people, the voters of New York, have kept electing a progressive mayor of New York, Bill de Blasio, who would like to be president, who I happen to think Cynthia Nixon may be a stalking horse for. She certainly has supported him in his efforts with the governor. I think there's an outside chance she could win.
You raised two points. One is
we have just less than a minute. But
okay,
ahead.
Sorry. I posited this the last time I was on, and I asked the question: did Trump, the businessman, and what we are now seeing of him in Washington, screw it up for the rest of the non-politicians to run? And I think a Cynthia Nixon may well be certainly more qualified than Trump, and we'll see as the campaign goes on.
But Teresa wanted to say something really quickly about Louise Wiltz.
I just wanted, Congresswoman Louise Slaughter passed away. She's there, her memorial service is this weekend, and I think she was an incredible public servant that we remember. Thanks to her, healthcare research is done not just on men, but on women and minorities, which has changed outcomes and saved people's lives. Thanks to her, there's a focus on the safety of antibiotics. Thanks to her, the Violence Against Women Act. She led the effort to move the affordable health care through the Congress. She was an amazing legislator.
I'm sorry.
In
Here
her honor.
Go.